Welcome to Transition, Gadgets 360's gaming and pop culture podcast. In today's episode, we are going to be talking about the PS5 and the upcoming Xbox, which could be Xbox 720, 1080, 4K, or whatever. We don't know the exact name. So we are going to be looking at the things that we want to see in these consoles, and we're also going to be looking at some things such as the specifications that have been leaked or rumored, and we're also going to be looking at some sort of a DRM thing on the PS5, which could have some kind of a Bitcoin blockchain DRM system. So to talk about all of this, we have our ever enterprising person, the games editor Rishi Alwani.
Just to clarify, you won't be able to use your PS5 to mine Bitcoin. Let's get that disclaimer out of the way. Blockchain and Bitcoin are two very different things. And yeah, I kind of got a little pedantic over there. But we also have a friend of the podcast, Xbox P3.
Yeah, Mikhail Madnani.
If only.
Alright, and I'm your host Pranay Parab. So, Rishi, why can't we mine Bitcoin on the PS5? Really sad.
Actually, theoretically you can, because a lot of the components are going to be coming from every Bitcoin miner's best friend, AMD. There's a speculation that we're going to see a next-gen Ryzen CPU. We're going to see AMD's next-gen Navi.
Next-gen Ryzen CPU.
Yeah, next-gen Ryzen. And we're probably going to see its next gen Navi GPU architecture as well. Now, what this basically means is AMD. For those of you who are of the keyboard and mouse persuasion, it means that AMD's focus is on ensuring profitability, and that would mean sustained profitability from companies like Microsoft and Sony by making sure their designs go there first, and then later flesh them out for PC components. So there's a good chance we'll see their next-gen CPU and GPU architecture on the PS5. We've already seen a couple of leaks courtesy LinkedIn on work going on around this. We've seen information doing the rounds on sites like HardOCP and WCCF Tech regarding Navi GPU architecture going to be a part of the PS5. So it's safe to say that yes, AMD would be making sure the components are in place. That being said, the reason why the PS5 is commonly misunderstood to be associated with Bitcoin is the fact that Sony filed a patent regarding blockchain. Blockchain is basically a distributed ledger shared across across millions and millions of machines to ensure that there's some sort of parity in the amount in terms of Bitcoin mining and Bitcoin use. It also has its use cases outside of Bitcoin. Banks are trying to make use of it. We're seeing other industries make use of it as well. Sony's use case for this involves DRM. Their logic being that third-party DRM solutions aren't exactly the best way forward, because they're not user-friendly, and there's a good chance that the DRM companies could go out of business. So in order to ensure a sustained lifespan of an online game or a service, and also ensuring that there's no piracy or circumvention of product, DRM is a blockchain DRM is what they're considering. So that's a patent filing which was done with regards to the PS4 and possibly PS5. But then right now there are no concrete details from Sony itself. So that's something to keep in mind. Though, yeah, I mean, at the time of recording this podcast, it is a possibility that Sony may implement this in some fashion with the PS5.
Yeah, it sounds interesting. Now that you put it that way, this is the first time I'm interested in, you know, blockchain in any kind of positive way. Because so far my interpretation has been that, okay, banks want to use it, blah, 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 boring, dull.
Because as of now, it was already in that stage where you want to just mute the keyword and just avoid all of it. So
And honestly, I wouldn't blame people from doing that, because there's been so much saturation around Bitcoin and blockchain that, it's bound to get on most people's nerves. So no surprises there.
Yep, exactly. So the PS5, I understand, should be in advanced stages of development by now.
That's safe to say, because we already had PlayStation CEO John Cordera tell Sony investors during an investor briefing that the PS4 is in the final stages of its life cycle. Now, he made that statement, I think, just a month leading up to E3, which, I mean, makes perfect sense, right? Because it came out in 2013, we're already in 2018, 5 years hence. We should probably see one last hurrah, with probably Last of Us 2 being probably the last exclusive on the console. Mm. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, to give you some perspective, the PS3 launched in 2006 and we didn't see a successor till 2013. So, I mean, 8-year life cycle is pretty good.
And plus, there'll still be cross-gen games because the PS3 to PS4 had a ton of cross-gen games. In fact, Persona 5 came out on PS3 as well. Even a lot of Japanese developers, basically, it takes them a lot of time to get their bearings with new consoles. At least going from the PS2 to PS3 era was pretty rough. That's like considered the dark ages for a lot of people, a lot of fans of Japanese games, because many developers couldn't extract the best of the console's hardware. And they've only recently started doing it with PS4. I mean, Q1 2017 is considered the golden Japanese quarter of this current gen. So, like, it remains to be seen how long it'll take them to do the stuff on PS5. A lot of them are moving to Unreal Engine for development, which is obviously going to help things out as opposed to their proprietary system. So, I still expect a lot of cross-gen games, at least coming out of Japan. We already know it's going to happen with the Western side because you still have FIFA coming out on multiple generations. So,
yeah, and speaking of cross-gen, we already are hearing from CD Projekt Red that Cyberpunk 2077 is going to be a cross-gen title. We've also heard the same that there's a good possibility that the next Call of Duty, not Black Ops 4, the one after that, would probably be a cross-gen title as well. Adding to what Mike said, the PS3 was notoriously difficult to code for. PS4, not so. And a lot of it also had to do with the fact that within Sony's management, there's a massive change. The person responsible for the PS1, PS2, and PS3, Ken Kutaragi, retired from Sony. And the reins on the new architecture for PS4 fell in the hands of Mike Cerny. Fun fact, Mike Cerny also had a hand in making Sonic the Hedgehog and Crash Bandicoot. So,
and Knack.
Oh yeah, that too. And he's also known as the father of the PS4 because all the architecture work, all the principles behind it, which make it easy to program for, were envisioned by him. And it is probably, I think, the first Sony console after the PS Vita to be made in collaboration with teams outside of Japan. So, I mean, it's safe to say that they'd want to continue on that trend. They'd want to make sure that it's easy to program for because the PS4 really, really hurt the company in its early years. I mean, I remember a period... Sorry, the PS3.
Three, exactly.
In its early years. Yeah. Because I remember there used to be a period of time, I think 2007, 2008, you had the Xbox getting a ton of really good games. You had Bioshock, you had Mass Effect, you had Orange Box, which ran better on the Xbox 360. And you even had Call of Duty, which ran better on the Xbox 360. And then on the PS3, well, you had Resistance Fall of Man. And, that was about it for a while until, you know, the better games started showing up. So, it's safe to say they will want to make it easy to program for. But I think that's all we know about Sony's side of things right now. And I think we also heard some information on Microsoft, too.
Yeah, so... First of all, like before we proceed to Microsoft, what I do want to understand is that there was a huge hype around this whole game streaming thing. So if, you know, we go to the next console generation and we don't have some kind of a massive push for streaming your games, just like you stream your movies from services such as Netflix and Amazon Prime Video and Hotstar, I would be very, very surprised if that kind of a thing wasn't baked into the console right from the beginning.
That's an interesting point, because there are a couple of things at play here. One, Sony bought Gakkai, the company responsible for game streaming, back in 2013, just before announcing the PS, or just around the time they announced the PS4. And they've integrated Gakkai's deck into the into PS Now, which was their streaming service. And fun fact, I think Dave Perry, the guy behind Gakkai, also made Earthworm Jim. So essentially what they've done is they've taken that tech, they've put it on the PS4, they've put it on PC, and I think the PS3 and Vita, at least till for now, at least are supported. I'm not sure. I think that's going to change.
No, right now, PS Now is only available on PC and on PS4.
Thank
not
you.
Not even on Mac anymore.
Yeah.
And support has been pulled from the TVs which had support for it, yeah. Which is like the weirdest decision ever, but sure, that's what Sony is doing. But right now, you can only play PS Now, you can only do PS Now stuff on PC and PS4.
Yeah.
PC equal Windows.
Yep. And I mean, we have seen leaks where Sony would allow you to download your games and play them with PS Now, but nothing concrete from Sony just yet. Will we see streaming baked in? I think that would possibly happen at a system level will be activated is another story, because there's one philosophy that Sony holds rather dear to it right now, which is why you have so many options on Sony right on PlayStation right now, is that Sony believes, and this is something I've heard from multiple Sony executives over the course of this generation, is that the company believes in giving consumers choice, right? So it's not like they're going to say, hey, we won't bring our games out physical retail because you can buy it digitally. They will make sure that consumers have a disc option, they have an option to buy it digitally, and that, as we've seen very recently, the ability to even purchase certain online subscriptions offline. So we've seen that with PS Plus, where PS Plus is now available at retail, and there are rumors that we might see PS prepaid cards as well. Nothing's confirmed at this stage at the time of recording this podcast. But then but that's a logical extension. The idea is to give users choice. And I have a feeling that philosophy will extend to streaming as well. Because what we also do know is that Sony has been eyeing Asia for a big PS Now expansion. It's something they've been eyeing for over, I think, 3 to 4 years now. We've had executives from the company come in and out, speak to distributors, speak to publishers in the region, try to get a sense of where broadband connectivity is going. But the problem is PS Now in its current architecture is extremely bandwidth heavy. You need at least a 20 Mbps line. And while the mainstream tech press would love to extol the virtues of Reliance Jio and all the good it's done, fact of the matter is India's not there yet. So, streaming would be a part of it, but knowing Sony and how they make their hardware, I don't think we're going to see a streaming only box. We're probably going to see it be baked in at some level. And whether users want to use it or not is on them.
So now, since we mentioned this, it's also time to bring in Microsoft and what they could do in the next generation. So before we talk about what we know about the next Xbox, which was, I think, mentioned at E3 2018.
Yes.
So one thing I would like to highlight is that Microsoft is far more invested in the streaming thing than Sony, considering that they already have launched the Xbox Game Pass service.
I think you mean they're more invested in subscriptions and services, not streaming as itself, because as much as they don't honestly care about bandwidth caps of anyone, given their update sizes for like literally everything on Xbox, and also how slow it is to actually install. Like if you buy a game like Forza 7 right now, you're looking at a few hours just to get through the install from the disc and then download the stuff, because for some reason the console can't do both things at the same time. So it's like they don't respect that at all. I don't really see them doing anything streaming right now, because they seem to be finding a decent amount of success with Game Pass, which essentially is like Netflix, except you get to download your stuff to play it. It's not streaming. So I'd say they'll go all in, and I'd honestly see them do a bundle thing where you can buy a Game Pass and Xbox Gold together for a discounted rate, or eventually I have a feeling they'll just do away with Xbox Gold and make it Game Pass, where you just pay, like they'll increase the price of Game Pass and you have to do that for online, and you do it because they have enough people playing online on their system, and they've started inflating their numbers now thanks to the Nintendo Switch and mobile, because Minecraft on those platforms needs Xbox Live. You have an option to do it if you want to play online, so you already have that many more Xbox Live active users. So I don't know whether they'll go into streaming, but Microsoft is definitely more into the whole services angle with the thing. Like they're even adding Dolby Vision and all like random stuff like that. Like, I mean, you just wonder, like, you know, fine, you're doing all this, but that's not really why people buy consoles.
Yeah, but don't you think that the end game for a service such as Game Pass is that you can like play whatever game you want, whether you download it or not?
It likely would be, but the thing is, given how big games are right now, you have many games. In fact, Microsoft's first-party lineup, a lot of them are above 100 GB right now, even on the base Xbox One S, not even the One X. I don't see a situation in which people will be able to play those. I mean, look at what's happened with net neutrality in the US, and the US is Microsoft's biggest market. If something happens with throttling the Xbox Live network download speed and latency and stuff like that, what do you think is going to happen?
What we do know is that Phil Spencer made a mention of the next Xbox at E3 2018, saying that it's in development. This was followed up by certain rumors that it's called Project Scarlet, and there could be multiple SKUs, which could see, you know, them probably doing one without a disc drive, one with streaming only. It's a possibility for them to do stuff like that. But then coming back to circling back to what you did say, Pranay, is that yes, Microsoft's more invested in the services side of things. But as a gamer, to me, that's disturbing because, I mean, I'm not buying a console to play games I can play on other consoles. I'd rather build a PC. And more importantly, I mean, where are the games? There are still no games. We're like 5 years into the Xbox One's life cycle. The good exclusives have been few and far between. So the question is right now is, I mean, to me, honestly, Microsoft doesn't seem like a first party platform or a publisher. If you look at how they operate versus Nintendo versus Sony, they're not adding consumer choice. They're adding just different ways to access the same things you can play. And there's a big difference between the two. And I frankly think you, what's the point of having Game Pass if you don't have great content, right? And that's something that's going to become an issue in the next few years. And I think this is something we even discussed in a previous podcast where some publishers will see it as devaluing of content. And we've already seen Ubisoft and Warner Brothers be very vocal about this, saying that why should I make less money on a game by putting it on Game Pass when I can just sell it for $60? And more importantly, if you look at how publishers are, a lot of them are looking to have the same game run for a longer period of time, making more money off the same engaged user base. Now, frankly, I think that's a recipe for disaster because it'll mean saturation. We're already seeing it. Because if you spend probably 100 plus hours in Overwatch or Fortnite, you're not gonna want to spend a similar amount of time on an Assassin's Creed or whatever the next Lord of the Rings or Batman game Warner Brothers is making. So at the end of the day, the Game Pass situation, to me at least, it seems like Microsoft's outside of the indies, outside of smaller games, it's going to be really tough to convince the bigger publishers to play ball. I mean, sure, Bethesda is one of them who's come on board with Fallout and Elder Scrolls. But then for both games, there are monetization methods aside from just the base game, right? There's microtransactions in Elder Scrolls and Fallout has a bunch of season pass content. So I don't know whether we're going to see how that's going to pan out. But that being said, Microsoft seems to be committed to it. They have a new AI feature called Fast Start, which apparently enables machine learning. So developers don't have to do anything to make sure you can start your games faster. But I don't know how that's going to pan out with the new console. Because if you ask me, building on what Mike said, they're in a situation where I think they should just destroy the entire architecture from ground up, because you can't have an architecture or a system in place where you have 100 gig patches. That's disrespectful.
So like this whole AI thing about Fast Start, which they've started implementing, it's kind of pointless because as I experienced it firsthand while downloading Nier Automata, which launched recently on Xbox One, after you download a certain amount, I had like 35 GB downloaded out of 45, and you needed I think 12 or 15 GB for the Fast Start, which lets you play the prologue or intro. And I played that, and the funny thing is, after you finish that, it says you can't actually save the game until you finish downloading the rest. Now, why didn't it tell me this in the beginning? So it basically just wasted 1.5 hours of my time. So I'm not really interested in their whole AI thing if this is the result. And I don't know about Game Pass. I see it being valuable for devs who've had games which aren't played much anymore. So like, as much as like certain Xbox fans would like to believe Halo Wars 2 wasn't as successful as it should have been, I like it. I have multiple copies of it. But yeah, now that Halo Wars 2 is in Game Pass, it's now apparently being played by more people than ever before or something like that. So it kind of makes sense for all these games. Fallout, Bethesda's obviously on board because they have a big marketing deal with Microsoft. So like, it's obviously money handed to get Fallout 4 and to get Elder Scrolls Online into Game Pass. You'd notice a lot of their partners are the ones who they have like marketing deals with for newer games. So I'd believe an Assassin's Creed game would show up in Game Pass, given that Microsoft has marketing deals for the newer ones. Stuff like that might happen. You obviously won't see Watch Dogs 2 showing up because that's like the Sony marketing deal. So a lot of that has a big part to play in what shows up in Game Pass and what doesn't. While obviously on Xbox, you have like the choice to like, you have multiple subscriptions. Not like it's a great thing or whatever. Like, good EA access is great if you like EA games and you want to try them out. But I don't see the point in Microsoft having Xbox Game Pass and Xbox Games with Gold together. One of them needs to go eventually. I'd in fact wager they should just like drop Gold completely. Like the Games with Gold thing, have it as Game Pass where you pay, you get those many games, and they might leave the thing after some time, just like how Netflix, some stuff goes, some stuff comes in. That makes more sense. And yeah, Game Pass, I'd see it as being Microsoft's obviously pushing for that. It's like how with music now, most people just have a streaming service. Many people don't even buy digitally or physically anymore. So they see games going in that direction. I don't see that happen because, like, music, you can download a whole album which you've bought for like 130 MB, which takes like a minute or two at best. But you have like Forza 7, which is 100 GB minimum. That's not going to take the same amount of time. And yeah, like, you can get all your 1 Gbps connections and all, but if you have a terrible FUP, that's like 3 Microsoft first party games per month you can download. That's it. That doesn't even incorporate the patches. So yeah.
Yeah. So since you mentioned this, the Netflix comparison, like, you can make it with Microsoft if they had a very strong first party library.
No, it's not even just the first party lineup, because a lot of people don't subscribe to Netflix just for the Netflix originals. They subscribe for everything in general. This whole, I don't think most normal people who buy a console look at, okay, like, they don't care if Halo or Uncharted is there. Okay, Uncharted, like, bad example, because that has a huge following here. But, like, if GTA is not on a console, it's not on a console. That's what people look for in India. You have GTA, you have FIFA. These are the bigger draws. No, so, like, people overestimate how much, like, Netflix obviously will advertise that you can stream House of Cards and watch the whole thing. But I don't really think many people are subscribing just for that. Like, that's a nice gateway to get into the whole thing. That's why Microsoft's pushing Fallout, Elder Scrolls Online. At least Fallout 4 is a big deal for a lot of people. So getting that for free is worth trying out Game Pass. They're doing that with their first party lineup also. I mean, you remember what happened when Sea of Thieves was a thing, right? Like, they said, oh, that many people played Sea of Thieves, but like, how many people actually bought the game or stuck around after? These are good to get you into the subscription, but they need stuff to make you stick around, which is why they keep adding the third party stuff.
Yeah, exactly. But then, you know, the larger point is that Microsoft's first-party library right now is a bit weak. I mean, a bit is probably an underestimation of the whole thing. But to launch any kind of subscription service and, like, to bake it into a console and then to tell people that, okay, at some point you can, like, stream games from this if, like, network permits, etc., you do need a very, very strong first-party library, and you need, like, other publishers on board who are, like, willing to put in their top-of-the-line titles as and when they launch. You can't have a situation in games where, like, something like a Fallout New Vegas or something is available for streaming, like, I don't know, like, 6 years after it releases. So that kind of situation will rob, like, the service of a lot of revenue. Like, they need a lot of launch day titles for something like that to work. And unfortunately, I don't see that happening in the near future, at least. So even if they launch the next Xbox around the same time as the PS5 or whatever comes in,
it'll probably be like a year gap now in between both. I'd say, like, Sony will launch something new first and they'll be like, oh, it's the most powerful console that'll last for a year. Then the Xbox will come and one-up it, and that's what's probably going to happen going forward. But no, like, granted, their first-party lineup right now is quote-unquote weak. They have Forza Horizon 4, which is going to be in Game Pass day one. So a lot of people would, like, subscribe to Game Pass for 3 months, get their fix out of that, and, like, cancel the subscription. That adds 1% to Microsoft's Game Pass subscription base, which is what they use for, like,
yeah, and, you know, the funny thing is that in India, they keep putting up that 50 rupees for 1 month Game Pass offer, where you can, like, sort of just, like, the first month that you sign up for, you can play it for, play all the games over there for 50 rupees. So you just wait until you can, like, you reach a point where, okay, Forza Horizon 4, I really want to play it, pay 50 rupees and play it.
Yeah, and also, they actually have handled their storefront on the console better for Xbox One games, because if something's in Game Pass or it's on Games with Gold, you get multiple options when you go on the page. Like, you can add it to your account for free with Games with Gold, or you can buy it straight out. Or you can, like, if you have Game Pass, you get a discount when you buy it, or you can try with Game Pass. So all these things are there. It's handled much better than how Sony handles the store, because I've had a lot of trouble dealing with stuff which is either free on PS Plus or discounted, where some stuff will show up as unavailable if you got some part free and not other stuff in a bundle. And also, it's a little weird over there.
Yeah, but you know what? Like, I'm actually okay with that kind of a thing, rather than having an Xbox Store-like situation where some games like Sonic Mania don't even show up on the digital store.
Oh, yeah,
store,
like Sonic Mania that launches today as of this recording of the podcast, which is available at retail. In fact, hopefully I'll be picking up my copy on Xbox One today.
To clarify, Sonic Mania Plus.
Yes, Sonic Mania Plus is the physical version of Sonic Mania with an art book and a $5 DLC baked in on the disc or on the cartridge. And that's still not available on Xbox in India. Like, I checked literally an hour ago, and it's not there. You can pick it up on PSN, or you can pick it up on PS4 in the store. You have to buy it Xbox physically, basically. Games like Firewatch are still not available. even though Microsoft keeps saying, yes, we are committed over here, you have big games like Divinity Original Sin 2, which won a ton of RPG awards last year and was PC Game of the Year for a lot of people, not showing up on Xbox in India yet. So
yeah, but I mean, this also goes to show one thing in general, because if you look at Game Pass and the inconsistency involved, and if you look at Game Pass and the inconsistency involved, and if you look at how much it costs to make a game, I mean, what you're looking at, most budgets in excess of at least $30, $40, $50 million going up to $100 million depending on the game. You think they're actually going to recoup money on subscriptions alone? They're not.
That's why it's on a single platform,
which is why at the end of the day, for developers, I mean, you'll have to actually games for Game Pass will have to be made for Game Pass. You can't just hammer out AAA titles for Game Pass, because the math will not work out in any universe. And I have a feeling the subscription will only work for a certain kind of game. It's not something that I see every publisher embracing, because one, the math won't work out, and two, why would you want a part of $60 when you can try getting most of $60? So it's going to be fun to see how that plays out. But I think we should move over to the next part, which is what we want to see from both next-gen consoles.
More first-party titles on Xbox.
No, I'd say better handling of sharing media to social, better capturing, dealing with that better. Being able to stream easily on YouTube and Twitch and not being forced to use Mixer. I mean, like, no one cares about that, seriously. Like, they keep pushing it and saying, oh, you get Mixer goodies and you get all these whatever. People don't care about that. If they wanted that, they just use Twitch Prime, which is what everyone uses, or YouTube. But no, it's still super hard to do this. If you want to share a screenshot, you have to wait for the whole thing to upload. Or if you want to share a clip to Twitter, you have to wait for the whole thing to upload. It can't multitask. Like, given how Microsoft literally makes a OS used by millions or billions of people, whatever, you can't have your game console not being able to do two things at a single time. I'd also want it to be like PS4, where if you insert a disc, it finishes installing and it's downloading the patch or multiple patches at the same time in the background, as opposed to an Xbox where it can only download one thing at a time or do one thing at a time. So that's basically all I want from Microsoft, literally. Yeah. And also, yeah, the controller needs to have a screenshot button, because, like, Nintendo also did it now.
Come on. You know what? So that, and also I would like to see some kind of a feature that allows you to send your screenshot quickly to a computer or a phone or some other device, rather than, you know, going and uploading it online directly. Like, I keep having this issue with the PS4 as well, where you can share your screenshots to, like you can pull it out via pen drive. Okay, you can put it online on Twitter and Facebook or whatever, and then, you know, download it from there. But if you want directly just on your phone to keep a copy on another backup or something, then yeah, again, it's not easy at all. You have to go through.
What would
you
want
that.
Them to do for this, to get it on your phone easily?
So something like, you know, you can easily send it to the PS app on your phone quickly.
So that,
like,
the Xbox One does that, but it uploads. So it basically uploads to Xbox Live and you can access your capture stream on that.
But like, then, you know, you need Xbox Live games with gold for that, right?
I am not sure about that, but you probably, I don't know how they handle that anymore. Yeah. I have gold, I stopped worrying about them.
Okay then. Yeah. In my case, for the PS5, I'd like to see backwards compatibility with PS3 and PS4 titles.
No, dude. PS3, Last of Us 2 remastered. PS3, how will they make money?
Good luck with getting PS3 backward compatibility. I mean, there's a higher chance of Forza Motorsport 7 being patched to become better than Forza Horizon 3 than that happening.
Dude, but you know what? Like, I actually think they'd probably do PS3 compatibility and not PS4 because remasters.
But they can remaster PS3 stuff again, The Last of Us Remastered Definitive Edition.
Yeah, so,
do stuff like that.
I'd like to see backwards compatibility in some form on the PS5. I'd like to see, as Pranay said, easier cross-device sharing. I think that would be really cool on the next PlayStation. I would obviously love to see them continue allowing us to upgrade our hard drives. To me, that's something I've done regularly this generation, so I'd like to see that continue. I can, you know, just swap out an internal drive and put in a new one. I think that's always cool. And I'd like to see controllers that whose rubber analog sticks don't wear out.
Oh man, mine also is like beginning to tear off now. That's such a big complaint. But you know what? Like, I actually like the controller more because it doesn't have those stupid battery AA batteries.
Oh, forget that. The controller, I hope they stick with symmetric joysticks. I don't want them to move to this asymmetric nonsense which Microsoft has influenced Nintendo to also.
I like that.
But speaking of hard drives, Sony really, really needs to let you use more than one hard drive or share hard drives. prioritize between friends for game installs like Xbox One. Like, okay, Xbox One has horrible patches, but I can just give you my hard drive. You can give me a game and I can take it. That's fine.
Yeah,
and
but
it just
the problem verifies is the license. You need games on Xbox to begin with.
Okay.
So therein lies the issue. But then, yeah. I do agree that cross-platform sharing is a problem on PlayStation. Where, you know, you basically... How it works is that the PS4 recognizes the external hard drive as a part of the console and therefore locks stuff down, which is a problem. I mean, I can understand why they're doing this. It's because they want to prevent any form of, you know, misuse, jailbreaks and stuff like that. But it's also not user-friendly. So I'd like them to see that change on the PS5. I would obviously love them to continue having a disk drive with a reasonable install size, which we're seeing so far.
On the UHD support should be a thing because that's going to help games also. Because right now there's so many games which you can only fit that much data on the disk and you have to download the rest. Game sizes are going to become bigger going forward. Like, that's not going to change.
UHD supports would be useful.
I don't care about it for just playing 4K Blu-rays, like as such for movies and stuff. But for games, yeah, definitely.
I think UHD support would be nice. Probably baked in wireless VR would be killer, but that would probably drive the price up too high. So
I don't care about VR, man. I don't want to like get
summer lesson, man.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm just thinking about this. Zone of Enders in VR would be god tier.
Well, fine, okay, fine. I'm all for VR. Okay, just like bundle VR everywhere and like charge me extra for it. But please give me like a 500 pack of vomit bags also, because simulator sickness, man.
Yeah. So and also on the Xbox side of things, I'd like them to basically burn the current OS to the ground with fire twice, nuke it maybe, start afresh. There's no harm in borrowing best practices from the PS4. Literally, there's no harm with doing that. Considering how multitasking and day-to-day use is so much better, considering that download failures aren't a thing, considering that you don't have a situation where you download a 60 gig game only to find it crashing after the first 5 minutes and then you have to re-download it, which is what happened to me with Nier Automata and Vampyr on Xbox One X. So yeah, I'd like them to just borrow best practices and do it properly, because it's kind of deplorable that you have the Nintendo Switch and PS4 both have better OSs than the Xbox at this stage.
Yeah, and so, don't remove Ethernet. Just don't.
Keep the Ethernet. That needs to be there.
The wireless future is dead. Just give me wired.
And I think in terms of spec, it's safe to say that we're going to see developers target native 4K. Whether they do 60 FPS or not remains to be seen. But I don't see that being likely, to be honest. Because at the end of the day, I mean, if you look at where even the marketing priorities lie, it'll probably be with 4K. What I think is going to happen is we're going to see a situation where you have the PS5 and next Xbox out around the same time. And then probably around 3 years into their life cycle, you'll probably see an iterative version, which will do 4K 60. So I think that's how it's going to pan out. But what I would really like to see from Microsoft more than anything else we've discussed right now is them actually having clarity on their PC strategy versus the next Xbox. Why I bring this up is because the Xbox has gone through an identity crisis this generation, the brand as a whole, wherein you had this period of time where there were a ton of games that made it to the PC as well, and now they're going to bring a bunch more. So what's the point of owning an Xbox? So I just hope they have some clarity there with the next console and at least keep stuff on it as exclusive for as long as possible to give people a reason to bother. Otherwise, what's the point? I mean, why would you bother buying a console for Quantum Break when it's going to be coming to Steam 6 months later? Why would you bother buying a console for Forza Horizon 3 when it's already available on PC? So to me, that's a sticking point. What's the reason to own one? So I'd like to see them have clarity on that, aside from, well, obviously, new titles.
Yeah, well, that's also there. All right, then. So let's move to the games we've been playing this week. I think, you know, once again, I'll just like let you two have the field, because this was, I think, the third week in a row where I played nothing but Exploding Kittens, even though I wanted to start Planescape Torment, which I finally got on iOS.
Congrats.
But unfortunately,
you gifted it to me like 2 years ago or something.
Yeah,
or a year ago.
Exactly. So the problem is that this game doesn't allow you to like have save syncing via iCloud. You have to make a copy of the save and like use some complicated method to send it to your other device. So that's why I didn't want to start it, because I haven't used my iPad that much in this time except for work. So I ideally would like to play it on the iPad, because I mean the menu elements and all look a little bit too tiny to play on an iPhone 7. So yeah, there you have it. That's my gaming journey.
So I've been playing Octopath Traveler. As I play most JRPGs, play it for a bit, follow the story, then try and break the game balance completely by figuring out where to get super high XP, super, like, this has a job system kind of like Final Fantasy V, where you can replace or use subclasses for your main thing. So I made my warrior a hunter, the dancer a scholar, scholar a thief, stuff like that. So you get skills from all these classes, mix and match together. It worked out really well. Found some rare enemies, like the equivalent of the metal slime or the golden hand in Persona and stuff like that. Been playing that, cross 75 hours in that now. So yeah, I've been playing a ton of that. And also, like, played more Golf Story now, finally, to at the end. I think by the time we record the next episode, I'd be done with it. It's been almost fantastic throughout, but this last area has some weird fetch quest grindy nonsense, which feels out of place compared to the rest. Like, all these sports RPGs, as I call them, do a good job of masking the actual fetch quest and grind with stuff to do, and they make it feel fresh. But this, the last bit has straight up had, like, go collect 900 things from here, and you play as a Pac-Man like thing, so not fun. Mm-hmm. But yeah, basically been just doing those two things.
Well, in my case, I've been playing Cosmic Star Heroine on the Nintendo Switch. It's going to be out, I think, August 14. It's pretty good. A lot of fun. A lot of homage to Mass Effect, to Chrono Trigger, to Resident Evil, of all things. And it's really, really, really good. The music is top-notch. Probably one of the strongest suits, aside from the combat system, which is very, very good, too. I mean, great story so far. Amazing enemy descriptions. Definitely want to check out. It's available on Steam, Vita, PS4 as well. So yeah, one that you guys should definitely check out.
Damn, I wish I'd picked up the limited run copy on PS4 now.
It's going to come to Switch, right, soon.
Yep.
And hopefully you'll have a Switch. Soon.
So I've been playing that.
Yeah, so what I want from Nintendo Switch Pro, new podcast, let's start.
Sure, next week. So yeah, basically been playing that and been playing a lot of Asphalt 9 Legends. It is good.
So are you still using that, whatever, Philippines VPN or something you'd found?
So what I did essentially was create a Philippines iOS account. I mean, a Philippines App Store account. And downloaded the game. For updates, well, I mean, I just have login to that account for the updates. And I just use a VPN to play it. And yeah, still working. And apparently there are India microtransactions in the game right now. So that's become a thing. And I've been playing the multiplayer too, and it's pretty good. So the grind, it's getting a bit grindy, but it's still a lot of fun because the level destruction that goes on never gets old. The moment-to-moment racing never gets old. The visuals still look impressive. So it's holding off quite well. I think I've played more of that than Cosmic Star Heroine. But yeah, it's good. It's good.
So, cool then. Yeah. So yeah, that's all we have for this episode of Transition, and we will see you with another episode next week. As always, don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram at Gadgets360. And if you have any questions, comments, or feedback, do write to us at podcast@gadgets360.com. The music for this episode comes via Magnus Solai Paulsen, whose album PPP PPP is where the tracks are from. And finally, if you like this podcast, don't forget to subscribe to us via the Google Podcasts app on Android and Apple Podcasts on iOS. Thank you so much for listening.